Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. From the front page, the bright side, students rise, meet the world. Bigger space at BHS to help young adults learn life skills. By D. Jack Elkery. Bloomington. For Courtney Marks, Director of Student Services at Bloomington District 87, fall classes can't start soon enough. In early July, she was touring an area of Bloomington High School that is undergoing significant renovations for the district's RISE program, which helps prepare young adults, age 18 to 22, with special needs, learn independent living skills, like how to budget, prepare meals, and do their own laundry. "It makes me feel just giddy," she said, "and I'm so hopeful. I know I can't wait till the first day of school when our students that we've had and are coming back come here and they're like, 'This is for us.' Like, yes, this is for you. This is how much the district loves you and recognizes how important you are." Work is currently ongoing in classroom spaces that house the old Bloomington Area Career Center, now the Bloomington Career Academy, located at the Willie G. and Gloria Brown Education Center. Currently, RISE has two adjoining classrooms in the center of the high school. They share laundry machines with the custodial department. The new area, with its own entrance, will feature multiple rebuilt classrooms, a dedicated nurse's suite, several accessible bathrooms, two residential kitchens that meet American with Disabilities Act accessibility standards, private laundry facilities, and simulated living and bedroom spaces for students to learn how to keep their own apartment. "It's honestly a better quality of life, right?" said special education teacher Jenna Peters. "That's what we're trying to offer them in our program. So for our district to put money into that, I'm so excited. It's awesome," she added. "And it just makes us feel like you value our kids and you value what we are doing. And that means a lot." Overcoming challenges. RISE is an acronym for Reaching Independence Through Supported Engagement. Each student enrolled has already graduated from Bloomington High School, but programs like this are mandated by the state to help students with individualized education programs by supporting each student's passion and purpose in life while promoting progression from school to post-secondary activities, Mark said in an email. And District 87 does a great job of going above and beyond to make sure that each and every graduate finds both success and community, Mark said. "Historically, for our students with disabilities, that tends to be a lot harder. And I don't think everybody recognizes that it's a lot harder for our students with disabilities to maintain those connections and maintain that independence," she said. "And so that is the purpose for RISE, and that's why our district has dedicated so much time and money and energy into renovating this space to make sure our students have the same opportunities that everyone else does," she added. Teachers and aides create a specialized learning plan for each student that focuses on life skills beyond cooking and cleaning and includes interacting with the community, said paraprofessional Roxanne Marling. "So even something like going to a restaurant and ordering food is a learning activity. Some of them have talking devices, and we try to help them use those talking devices and understand that it's okay that someone might have to wait a little bit for them to maneuver through the talking device," Marling said. "Students in RISE have a range of physical or mental needs," she said. "They may drop their food, or they may have an outburst. So we're just kind of there to assist them one-on-one, to help them get through those challenges," Marling said. "Like if they get really frustrated, that may be when they yell or jump. And, you know, just those random actions may scare people. But we try to help them, as well as people in the community, understand that they're safe. And, you know, they just need love. And they need a little extra care and extra support to basically overcome those challenges. That can be difficult for her students sometimes, Peter said, but the end results helps people see beyond their limitations. I had a student who is really shy, and she made friends, Peter said, and they sat together. Feels like a small thing for typically developing students, but for some students with disabilities, making friends is hard. So it just makes them a human being, not a person with a disability. Something new, something familiar. The district has allocated just over $1.4 million for the renovations, according to district documents, with the revenue coming from the county facility's sales tax. They also hope to offer future access to the RISE program for other area high schools that may not have such resources, said Michael Cornell, Chief Financial and Facilities Officer with District 87. Similar to the Bloomington Career Academy, which serves 18 high schools in total, other schools may be able to pay the tuition for RISE and send their students with needs to the program, he said, instead of them trying to have to replicate what we have. Why? When we have it, just send them here, Cornell said. Since the students in RISE have already graduated and are learning a different set of skills, it was important to have a space that was different from the regular classroom, Mark said. But the chance to expand was not always so simple, she said. Before there was talk of the Bloomington Career Academy having a different space, we were looking at churches. We were looking at other places that maybe had some underutilized space to see how we could create something that feels different for our students after they graduate, she said. Moving to an off-site location, while different from the usual classroom setting, would come with its own challenges for RISE students and staff being removed from district resources, Mark said. It brings some comfort to know that we're still in a space where I can still reach for that extra support if I need to, she said. But it feels different, right? I have a different entrance. I have a different area of the building. In the past few years, RISE students have started their own business, Marling said. They started making products, and we have a spring sale and a Christmas sale. And they can raise money so that they can go back out into the community, she said, something that helps solidify their lessons in the real world. We had one child that really enjoyed Starbucks, Marling said, and we were like, so you understand this much money would get you 5 trips to Starbucks. And so that kind of puts it into perspective for them, and just seeing the joy on their face, you know they've succeeded. These renovations will only allow those opportunities to expand, Peter said. It's its own space set up specifically to do that. I feel we can do so much more with our students with those spaces, she said. Because the students are the purpose. It's for this really special community that we've built and feeling like they're growing. And we're also growing, right? Peter said. It's not just a one-way street where I'm the person who knows things, and I'm going to tell you. We're both learning things and growing as human beings, and it's just a really cool environment to do that together. Turning to local news on page 2. Today's flick fact. Today's question. 80 summers ago, one item was so uncommon that you could rent it for 15 cents a day at the Miller Park Lagoon. Was it a pontoon, a swimsuit, goggles, or an inner tube? Today's answer, a swimsuit. Back then, in the 1940s, many people didn't own one, so Miller Park rented them for 15 cents a day. How time flies. 100 years ago. July 14, 1926. An increase at Miller Park on Sunday afternoon in automobile traffic has caused the park custodian and city fathers to scratch their heads for a suitable remedy for the situation. Congested traffic in the vicinity of the bandstand last summer occasioned the park custodian to restrict the inner drives during the Sunday afternoon concerts. This plan was also adopted for this summer. 75 years ago, July 14, 1951, the Bloomington City Council voted a wheel tax and raised the city water rates. the wheel tax levied a $5 per yearly license fee on all motor vehicles of 35 initial horsepower or less, and $10 on all with more than 35 horsepower. 50 years ago, July 14, 1976, assessed valuation of Bloomington's commercial and industrial properties may increase by more than $13 million. A United Appraisal Company representative said that reappraisal efforts have brought the commercial and industrial values to $91,444,520, which is $13,315,720 above the 1975 total. 25 years ago, July 14, 2001. After 12 years of working at Bloomington Family Eye Care Center, Mary Lou Sutter received a moving send-off. Co-workers surprised Sutter, a longtime cow aficionado, with a two-month-old calf as a going-away gift. "My sister's going to have to get a big picture of this," joked Sutter, after she was led blindfolded out to the office parking lot and the waiting purebred Angus from Newbauer Farms. It was Sutter's twin sister, now living in Texas, who started what has become a nearly lifetime association with the bovine for Mary Lou. "She couldn't produce Mary Lou when we were 18 months old, and it came out moo. And it stuck," said Sutter. Colfax Man Accused of Assault by Caitlin Klepek, Bloomington. A man from Colfax accused of sexually assaulting a minor girl who has intellectual disabilities has been detained in the McLean County Jail. Concepcion Martinez Rios, 39, appeared before Judge Amy McFarland on Friday afternoon for his initial appearance, facing 10 felony counts for an incident that police say occurred Wednesday at McLean County home. Assistant State's Attorney Daniel Guido, who filed a petition to detain the defendant, said each of the 10 charges qualified for detention in jail. According to the probable cause statement read by the prosecutor, the minor girl's mother reported to police her children were at home with Martinez Rios, who was watching them, when she checked her Roku camera, which live streams a feed from her home to her cell phone. She saw the defendant go upstairs for about 20 minutes, then came back downstairs, the statement said. She found the behavior odd because most of the children were downstairs, and she believed her oldest child was upstairs at the time, Guido said. She noted the oldest child suffers from a seizure disorder, memory loss, epilepsy, and other developmental delays, Guido said. The mother told police she had a bad feeling after seeing the defendant's demeanor over the live stream footage, and she took her daughter outside the household to speak with her, Guido said. The girl told her mother she had been touched inappropriately by Martinez Guidos, and the mother immediately called the police. Colfax police came to the home where they collected evidence for processing. The girl was taken to a local hospital for an examination, which showed results consistent with sexual assault. "The scariest part of this is the end," Guido said. "This child says she doesn't know if it's happened before. A kid with significant issues through no fault of her own, and she can't tell how many times this has or may have happened." Guido noted the sheer vulnerability of the victim put her more at risk, citing the other children in the household. But Martinez Rios targeted the one that was the most vulnerable. In asking for the defendant's release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said Martinez Rios is employed full-time with no criminal record at all. Additionally, Wallace said the defendant was compliant with police, taken into custody without incident, and voluntarily gave police the passcode to his phone upon arrest, showing who he could abide by conditions of release. Judge McFarland found his potential threat to be too great, and ordered Martinez Rios to be detained, and he have no contact with the named victim or any other child under 18 years of age. The defendant was scheduled for an arraignment at 9 a.m. on August 14th. Some road closures are upcoming. Holder Ellsworth Road, also known as County Highway 28 or 1200 North Road, between 2100 East Road and 2400 East Road, will be closed to through traffic starting on Wednesday, July 15th. The closure in Old Town Township is for pavement reconstruction and is expected to last through Friday, July 31st, weather permitting. Eastland Drive, Bloomington. In Bloomington, there will be traffic delays on Eastland Drive starting on Tuesday, July 14th, that's today, from Veterans Parkway to Hershey Road for asphalt service operations, weather permitting. The intersections along these routes will be temporarily closed periodically throughout operations to allow for proper asphalt installation. And Locust and Oak Streets in Bloomington. The intersection of Locust Street and Oak Street closed yesterday to all traffic for sanitary sewer work. This intersection is expected to reopen on Friday, July 17th. From page A6 of the Tuesday, July 14th edition of the Pantograph, Healthcare Assisted Living, Huge Oversight Gap. Federal spending on senior homes soars. Lawmakers urge regulation. By Ken Altucker of USA Today. The federal health programs Medicare and Medicaid spent more than $12 billion on assisted living facilities for older adults and people with disabilities, according to a new federal oversight report. The U.S. Government Accountability Office report, published July 2nd, offered detailed fundings on federal spending at assisted living facilities, which older adults are increasingly choosing for long-term care. Based on the report's findings of lucrative federal spending, Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren and Kirsten Gillibrand called for tougher oversight at these facilities. Warren said a report identified a huge oversight gap. Assisted living facilities receive billions of federal dollars, but there is no federal role in ensuring that they are providing high-quality care, Warren said. Residents of these facilities deserve better, and that starts by making sure that assisted living facilities are making good use of taxpayer dollars and not leaving our seniors out to dry. The difference between a nursing home and an assisted living facility. Assisted living facilities house and provide care to seniors and some people with disabilities. Though people typically live independently at these facilities, they can get help with daily activities such as bathing, eating, and using the restrooms. Nursing homes often are staffed by nursing assistants as well as high-skilled positions such as LPNs or registered nurses. Nursing home residents generally have access to around-the-clock nursing or rehab services. Though Medicaid in many states pays for nursing homes for low-income residents, little was known about how much the federal government spends on assisted living facilities. The GAO report quantified Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services spending at these homes. Medicare spent $8.5 billion on behalf of nearly 830,000 people at assisted living facilities, the report said. Most of the spending was for hospice care, but residents also received home health services, such as nursing and physical, occupational and speech therapy. Medicare also paid for home visits to assess people and for nail care and psychotherapy. The report also identified $3.5 billion in federal Medicaid spending for services provided in assisted living facilities. The report didn't tally how much states paid to assisted living facilities. The report said that the $12 billion figure didn't tally spendings from other federal agencies such as Housing and Urban Development and Veterans Affairs, which also pay for room and board and other costs at assisted living facilities. It also didn't include spending by private insurance companies that administer Medicare Advantage plans. Democrats call for more oversight. Assisted living facilities are typically regulated by states. Nursing homes are regulated by the Federal Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services and subject to routine inspections. Gillibrand, the top Democrat on the Senate Aging Committee, vowed to bolster regulation and oversight of such facilities. Seniors and their families deserve protection and peace of mind when seeking care in assisted living facilities, Gillibrand said. Though these facilities receive at least $12 billion a year in taxpayer funding, they are subject to little federal oversight to guarantee resident safety. That is unacceptable. Warren sought more oversight of assisted living centers for nearly a decade. Along with other senators, she requested a 2018 GAO report that documented safety concerns, such as medication errors and deaths, at facilities in 22 states. During President Biden's administration, Warren called for federal reporting standards for problems at assisted living facilities. LaShawn Bethea, executive director of the National Center for Assisted Living, an industry group, said assisted living is a high-quality option for more than a million Americans. Bethea said the GAO report reinforces the idea that a wide variety of assisted living options and state regulations through Medicare waivers is the best approach. A one-size-fits-all approach does not fit our assisted living residents, who each have unique needs, Bethea said. Affordability concerns persist. Assisted living facilities typically are less expensive than nursing homes for seniors seeking long-term care. According to CareScout's Cost of Care Survey in 2025, the survey found U.S. families spent on average $74,400 a year for care at an assisted living center. The average annual tab for nursing home care was nearly $115,000 for a semi-private room and slightly more for a private room. Middle-class families struggle to pay for long-term care, according to a March AARP report. The report said the cost of the most common type of long-term services surged nearly 50% from 2019 through 2024, far outpacing median income growth of 22% for senior households. And turning to the Pantograph opinion page on A7, America's Reading Crisis Started with Smartphones by David Shelley. A simple statistic often stops people in their tracks. Reading for pleasure as a child is the factor that studies show is more closely correlated with future success than anything else, even more than family background, wealth, schooling, or peer group. But in America now, fewer children than ever are reading for pleasure. The percentage fell from 53% in 2012 to 39% in 2022, according to a study by the National Endowment for the Arts. This mirrors data from the National Center for Education Statistics and from around the world. Levels of reading for pleasure among children were solid in every report until 2011, when they started to see a precipitous decline. It's probably not a coincidence that 2011 and 12 was the time that smartphone adoption became prevalent in the U.S., with almost half the adult population owning a smartphone by the end of 2012, and two-thirds by 2015. The statistics in the decline for reading pleasure are inversely proportional to those that track the number of hours of smartphone usage. These now amount to roughly nearly 5 hours a day for the average American, with younger adults clocking in at 7 hours a day. For everyone involved in book publishing, this decline in reading for pleasure is one of the most significant existential concerns. A study in 2025 of more than 200,000 Americans found that the recent declines in reading for pleasure were steeper among Black Americans, lower income groups, people with less education, and those in rural areas. The decline in boys and men reading for fun was also much steeper than that for girls and women. America knows that eating 5 servings of fruit and vegetables per day is good for health. America knows that exercise is good for fitness, but I suspect most Americans do not know that regularly reading for pleasure is scientifically proven to improve mental well-being, increase empathy, and protect against dementia. Crucially, helping a child to explore the magic of reading is the single most helpful thing that any parent or caregiver can do to maximize their chances of future success. Even just 10 minutes of reading for pleasure a day has been shown to have enormous benefits. In data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, kids who read for pleasure score substantially higher, even adjusted for family background. Kids who read for pleasure also experience vastly improved mental health, according to a national literacy report. A campaign in the book industry, Raising Readers, aims to make these facts more widely known. The slogan is, "Reading is golden," because we do not believe reading should be seen as a competitor to scrolling on a smartphone, but instead as an antidote to it, a respite from the mental toll that all-day digital presence can take on anyone. Reading offers unique benefits and pleasure. Sometimes that pleasure can be hard won. It's not a simple, instant dopamine hit, but it's enduring and long-lasting. We remember the books we loved as a child for the rest of our lives. Can we say the same for a meme we enjoyed or a social media post? To get into the swing of reading, both reading print books or listening to books, routine is important for busy families, which is why we're suggesting starting with just 10 minutes a day of reading with a child per day. This could be a bedtime ritual, even a chapter of an audiobook on the way to school. Where we can, we are also trying to get books to those who need them the most through partnerships with little free libraries, among others. So, in the same way you might hand a child an apple to eat, give them a book, and read it to them or with them. It might be the most powerful thing you can do to improve their life. And if you want to improve your own mental well-being, why not take some time out of your day to get back into reading? David Shelley is chief executive of Hatchet Book Group and Hatchet UK. Looking at page B8 of the Tuesday, July 14th pantograph, seeing the Bloomington's five-day forecast. Looks like the heat dome may be coming back for a little bit. Today, which is Tuesday, July 14th, mostly sunny, hot, and humid, with a 91 degrees today. Possible danger of dehydration and heat stroke while doing strenuous activities. Expect more than 10 hours of sunshine, with relative humidity at 65%. Clear and partly cloudy tonight. A low of 72, with fog late, and again very humid. For the rest of the week, on Wednesday, we see another mostly sunny, hot, and very humid day with a high of 94 degrees during the day and an overnight low of 71. On Thursday, another hot and humid day with a thunderstorm possible, high of 92 and a low overnight of 70. Friday, sounds like a broken record, hot with a thunderstorm in parts. A high of 91 during the day and 71 overnight. And Saturday, partly sunny and humid. No sign of rain, at least at this point. And showing again a high of 90 and an overnight low of 67. 67 sounding somewhat promising. And the dreaded real feel temperature today is showing a real feel of at noon of 103 degrees in the Bloomington normal area, at 4 p.m. that goes down slightly to 101, and at 8 p.m. it is still going to feel like 91 degrees with, of course, very high humidity. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the pantograph from Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. Please stay tuned.